back in Moscow after he went to Moscow taking all the data from NSA. He said that was one of the worst offenses he saw when he was at NSA, that they were giving all this American data, Palestinians talking overseas to relatives or friends in Palestine and the occupied territory. And NSA was giving that data to Unit 8200. So you have Unit 8200 that's collecting a lot of data from the United States, from Americans. They're using it for targeting, and Palantir is one of the companies that's enormously sophisticated in terms of targeting. So what the problem is here is that you're getting information from the United States that the Israelis are using to target the civilians in Gaza. And there's been 33,000 killed now. So it's just an enormous problem that the U.S. has got to stop supplying all this data and the targeting materials to Gaza, or rather to the Israelis to target Gaza.
Jim Bamford, we'd like to do part two of the discussion and post this online at democracynow.org. James Bamford is longtime investigative journalist. We'll link to your pieces for The Nation magazine, one called The NSA Wants Carte Blanche for Warrantless Surveillance, and the other, How U.S. Intelligence and an American Company Feed Israel's Killing Machine in Gaza. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for our digital fellowship. You can learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Check out our newsletter, our podcasts. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
The flowers are blooming, the birds are singing, and KBOO's spring membership drive is back. If you enjoy alternative radio that pushes the status quo, then support KBOO by becoming a member today. Donate online at kboo.fm/give between now and May 25th and support avant-garde airwaves.
What does the average KBOO listener think of self-help radio?
Hard and complicated.
I have no idea what it is.
What is this old-time music?
I feel so proud of myself.
It seems kind of worthless.
Why does it have to make so much noise?
It feels very hipster.
That's the worst thing.
Look at how humanity has used their intellect.
Self-Help Radio, a different theme explored with music and talk every week. Tuesdays, midnight to 3 a.m. on KBOO Portland.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
Hello, and you are listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350 Climate Action. Our show presents environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Eco Justice Radio acknowledges that we record the show on the traditional territory of the Tongva and all of their relatives. Welcome, I am Jessica Aldridge. On today's show, Toxic Exposure, the Monsanto Roundup Trials, and the Search for Justice, I will be interviewing Dr. Shadi Nabhan, hematologist and medical oncologist, and also author and podcaster. Dr. Nabhan is an expert in lymphoid malignancies and treating and diagnosing cancers. He is the author of Toxic Exposure, the True Story Behind the Monsanto Trials and the Search for Justice. He received his medical degree from Damascus University in Syria. After performing basic science research at the Massachusetts General Hospital, Harvard Medical School, he completed his internal medicine residency at Loyola University in Chicago. Dr. Nabhan maintains active medical licenses in 5 states and has over 300 peer-reviewed articles and abstracts. For years, Monsanto declared that their product Roundup, the world's most widely used weed killer, was safe. But in 2015, scientific studies concluded that glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, is probably carcinogenic. The Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, and Monsanto disagreed with the findings as scientists worked to understand the link between glyphosate and cancer. Dr. Shadi Nabhan's book, Toxic Exposure, tells the true story of his role as an expert physician witness who testified in multiple state and federal trials against Monsanto. His book recounts the heartbreaking stories of numerous patients who developed the cancer non-Hodgkin lymphoma after regularly using Roundup on yards and school grounds. Monsanto is now owned by Bayer, one of the largest agrochemical companies in the world. These companies and the EPA downplayed the health dangers of Roundup and the active ingredient glyphosate even after Monsanto lost numerous court cases, owing billions in judgments, and settled out of court for more than $11 billion for more than 100,000 patients. In this interview, we discuss the history of Roundup, the dangers of glyphosate, the trial stories and verdicts, and what the everyday person can do to fight for justice against this agricultural behemoth. Thank you for tuning in to Eco Justice Radio and our show, Toxic Exposure, the Monsanto Roundup Trials and the Search for Justice. I am your host, Jessica Aldridge, and it is my honor to welcome our guest, Dr. Shadi Nabhan, hematologist and medical oncologist, and also author and podcaster. Welcome to Eco Justice Radio.
Jessica, thank you so much for inviting me. It's really such a pleasure to be with you. I appreciate your invite. Looking forward to our discussion and dialogue.
I am looking forward to this discussion as well. And I said to you recently, I've had a lot of people talk to me about glyphosate recently, and I just so happened you were coming on the show, and this is a fantastic serendipitous conversation. So let's get right into it. You are a board-certified hematologist. You're a medical oncologist, as well as the author of Toxic Exposure, The True Story Behind the Monsanto Trials and the Search for Justice. Can you explain your area of expertise specifically as it relates to being an expert witness in the Monsanto trials?
Yeah, so, you know, oncologist and a hematologist, I'm a cancer specialist. I treated and saw and diagnosed patients with cancer for almost two decades. And my specific area of expertise and interest has been non-Hodgkin lymphoma. So non-Hodgkin lymphoma is a form of cancer. Usually it involves the lymph glands and the immune system and sometimes the bone marrow, which is the storage where all of the cells usually are formed. And this is the area where I spend the majority of my time researching and diagnosing and treating. Basically, I ended up being an expert witness in the litigation trials against Monsanto because data came out showing the link between glyphosate and non-Hodgkin lymphoma, which is the area of my expertise and interest. And somehow I got involved in the first three litigation trials against Monsanto. That's really how the link is. But pretty much my expertise is a cancer specialist, a hematologist with a specific focus on non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Because of the link that emerged between glyphosate and non-Hodgkin lymphoma, I was asked to look at the evidence and potentially to consider serving as an expert witness on behalf of the patients. And that's what I ended up doing.
On a lot of court cases, and we're going to talk about those as well. So everyone, please stay tuned. What is the origin of the chemical glyphosate, the primary ingredient that would become this most widely used herbicide in the United States under the name Roundup?
So Roundup, like you just said, is the most used weed killer herbicide in the world and in the United States. And its main ingredient is glyphosate. Glyphosate was discovered in the 1950s by a Swiss chemist. I think if my memory serves me right, his name is Henry Martin. And then 20 years later, a Monsanto chemist, Paul Franz, was able to actually discover additional qualities of glyphosate, mainly that it kills weeds, and that chemist was employed by Monsanto. So Monsanto patented glyphosate, and it was combined with surfactants and additional chemicals, and it made Roundup. And Roundup then was commercially sold for the first time in 1974. And with time, it became the most used weed killer in the world, mainly because of the Roundup Ready seeds, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. But that's really how it all started. When it was discovered in the 50s by the Swiss chemist, it was found to have a lot of chelating properties. What that means, it could bind certain minerals, and it has the ability to bind them and chelate them. So that's really how it all started, and who knew it's going to evolve into this unbelievable wide use all over the world, and mainly in the United States.
And you just mentioned the seeds. What is the Roundup Revolution?
Yeah, the Roundup Revolution, or the Green Revolution, however you want to call it, this really started when Roundup Ready seeds became available and they were sold. And what these were GMOs, genetically modified organisms that allowed the seeds to be resistant to Roundup. So basically, the farmers are able to spray on the field, they kill the weeds, but they also don't damage the crops, because you're able to actually spray on the soybean and corn and everywhere, and these are resistant to Roundup, to the killing properties of Roundup. So it almost became farmer's dream come true, and suddenly this, the use of Roundup just exploded. But the Roundup Ready seeds were actually sold and done by Monsanto, the same company that was selling Roundup. So you're selling Roundup to kill the weeds, and you're selling Roundup Ready seeds that allows the resistance to Roundup. And because of that, the use of Roundup exploded in the mid-90s after that, because there was no fear of using Roundup or spraying Roundup all over. That's really the revolution, in my opinion. Now, part of this also, again, many folks have contended that the reason we needed that is because we are going to help hunger around the world, and we're going to be able. That really has never been proven, by the way. It's a good talking point, right? I mean, how can you argue with somebody coming and telling you, I'm going to try to eliminate hunger from around the world, right? But I'd like to see evidence that this indeed has happened, and we helped eliminating hunger around the world because of Monsanto's Roundup Ready seeds and Roundup. That did not happen.
So in the agricultural setting, on what crops do we see this usage of the herbicide Roundup and, well, thus glyphosate?
Yeah, you see that on soybeans, on cotton, on alfalfa, on corn. And I could tell you that 94% of soybean crops and about 90% of cotton and corn grown in the United States today are resistant to glyphosate. And that's, by the way, again, according to many estimates, including our own estimates by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. It's estimated about 287 million pounds of glyphosate was sprayed nationwide in 2016. This is like 1 year, 20 times as much as it was a couple of decades earlier. If you try to look at some of the statistics in terms of how many pounds or kilograms have been sprayed of glyphosate worldwide, I mean, you'll be just really, you will be flabbergasted as to how many pounds and kilogram and all of this has been used. And I think that's really important, because once you realize how often it's being used and all over, then you start thinking, is it possible? Is it plausible? So some of what we actually go through in terms of illnesses is related to that. I think it's important to at least ask the question. And I'm going to get you the stats in terms of, I don't want to really misquote the pounds and the number of that. I can tell you that according to the EPA, this is the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, 280 million pounds of glyphosate are applied to an average 298 million acres of cropland annually. This is annually. Think about that.
That is crazy. That is crazy. And we haven't even gotten, we both know from our own conversations, and obviously you and the work that you do, that the issue that this causes on the health and the environmental risks that this causes. So that number is incredibly staggering and gross. And I think it's time for us to talk about, you know, for the people that are spraying their plants with Roundup, either at their home, at their business, their university, in an agricultural setting, in a farm. Why is this bad? What are the health risks and the dangers of glyphosate and Roundup, and how are people getting sick? I know that you mentioned that Roundup helps the plant chelate. So what is that doing in the human body?
Right. Absolutely. These are very good questions. And I could tell you there are certain things that I believe we know and certain things that we don't know. We could speculate and ask questions, but we should really investigate and we should ask these questions. But you're really going against a tide. You're going against a tide because asking these questions rubs some people the wrong way. So when the Environmental Protection Agency tells you this is safe, it does not cause cancer, it causes no problems, and then you come in and say, well, wait a minute, I think it might, you're going against the governmental agency. And for the record, by the way, I mean, this governmental agency has said that regardless of who has been in office in the White House, whether it was a Republican administration or a Democrat administration, it actually has always been saying, well, glyphosate is safe. Not until 2015, when the IARC, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, which is a division of the WHO, or World Health Organization, came and said glyphosate is a probable human carcinogen. Not until then, suddenly things started to move around, and well, let's look at the association with cancer, specifically lymphoma. But Jessica, what you're asking is actually more important than that, because not every serious illness has to be cancer, right? There are autoimmune diseases, there are infertility, there are so many other things that people could actually be having problems with. Is it possible that this ubiquitous use of this herbicide all over the place, in the food, in the soil, on the crops, may have an impact on some of these ailments that we are suffering from today that we did not suffer from 20 years ago? It's a good question. However, are we ever going to have a definitive answer in the non-cancer one? Because I'm convinced about the glyphosate association with cancer as a probable carcinogen and the link to lymphoma, I'm convinced of that. I don't need any more conviction of that, but there are other ailments that I think deserve additional research.
Can you explain that chelation where the surfactants are like adhesive that allow that herbicide to stick to the weeds? And so now it's doing the same thing to the skin and the bone marrow, the cancer,
yeah,
you know.
So, you know, I mean, the and I'm sure we're going to get to this when we talk about the trials, because I do think that's really irrelevant. Monsanto has argued, well, look, glyphosate is safe. We've done so many studies on glyphosate. Now, we can talk about that in a little bit. But remember, Roundup is not glyphosate alone, right? Roundup is glyphosate is the main ingredient, but it also has surfactants and has additional chemicals in it. So the question is it possible that the collection of compounds together is really what's leading to the damaging effect of Roundup? So to answer your question in terms of the surfactants, surfactant is basically like a soapy detergent-like substance, and it covers the surface, and it allows the delivery of glyphosate to the target, right? So basically, you have more effect as a weed killer because the surfactant is helping this. Now, interestingly, the surfactant that is being used in the United States with the Roundup that's actually being sold is called POEA. And that formulation is specifically very toxic. And I can tell you that this POEA is banned in the European Union. So they have like a different formulation because the surfactant is different. So the question is, if you have this surfactant with the glyphosate, you form the Roundup to be more adhesive to the weeds, is it possible that then the glyphosate comes to the skin, you have more ability to absorb the chemical into your body? There's data already that you have some damage to the bone marrow cells when you have high exposure to Roundup, because it just gets into your body because the surfactant allows that to actually happen. And by the way, Monsanto has admitted in email communications that were shown in trials that they have never conducted a long-term carcinogenicity study on Roundup. They kind of play with the words and they say, we've done a lot of studies on glyphosate. But the question is, okay, let's assume you've done that. How about Roundup? And they have admitted, that they haven't done that with Roundup.
Just before we go to break, just going off on what you had just asked, in the 90s, Monsanto hired a prominent physician. His name was James Parry, I think it,
Parry, who specializes
and he specializes in genotoxicity, the damage that can occur to the DNA of cells, to assess if Roundup was genotoxic. Can you talk
basically
to that?
Basically, they hired a consultant, James Parry, from the United Kingdom. He is without reproach. He's well-known. He was a consultant, and he looked at the data that they had. James Parry concluded more studies are needed. He said, I cannot tell you, based on what you have, if it is genotoxic, which means damage the DNA. You need to do more studies. Do you want to take a guess if Monsanto performed any of the additional studies?
I think I'm going to get it right. They did not.
Good job. That's right.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. Listeners, stay tuned. We're going to talk about the three significant Monsanto court cases, what happened with those, the role that you played, Shadi, why the EPA was like, this might be a carcinogen, and then they're like, no, it's not, and they didn't take a stance on it. I want to know. I want to know why the EPA has been so soft on this for so long. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying Eco Justice Radio. Stay connected by subscribing on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests, listen to extended episodes, and get connected with us on social media. Today, you're listening to Toxic Exposure, the Monsanto Roundup Trials, and the Search for Justice. I am your host, Jessica Aldridge, and our guest is Dr. Shadi Nabhan, hematologist and medical oncologist, and also author and podcaster. Welcome back, everybody. Before we went to break, I had mentioned the EPA. The EPA originally classified glyphosate as a possible human carcinogen. But over the course of several years, the EPA stance, the Environmental Protection Agency, an agency out of the U.S. government, changed their stance, and glyphosate was deemed not carcinogenic and safe for human use. What happened? Why?
We don't actually know, Jessica, what happened exactly. I can tell you, and I detailed that in the book. I think it's important. It's worth mentioning. So companies that have pesticides, they had to conduct some studies, toxicology studies. And there was a lab actually in Illinois, in Northbrook, Illinois, called IBT Labs. And that lab was the lab that Monsanto used for their studies. That lab turned out to be fraudulent. They fudged and made up data. So the studies that Monsanto relied on and submitted to the EPA were fraudulent studies. Now, this part was not really Monsanto's fault because they outsourced it to the lab and the lab was fraudulent. And other companies were also victims of that fraudulent lab. And by the way, that lab, basically the leaders of that lab got prosecuted. It's all over. You can Google that. I detailed that in the book. So the EPA started asking Monsanto to repeat many studies. And over the course of several years, that request has disappeared. So they no longer requested additional studies. At the same time, the glyphosate was moved from potentially carcinogenic to non-carcinogenic. How that happened, I don't know 100%, but I certainly have my own suspicions of what possibly has happened behind closed doors. I do not have evidence. I've learned being involved in these courts and litigation, you have to have evidence. I don't know, but I'm free to have my own speculation.
Yes. Well, let's talk about those court cases. In your book, again, Toxic Exposure, you explain three significant Monsanto court cases. I want to break those down today. Why they're unique, your trial testimony, the outcome for each, did it set precedent for future litigations? So let's start with the first one. The first filed litigation case, which was Johnson versus Monsanto. When was this and what happened in that court case?
This was in the summer of 2018. It was very significant. It was the first trial that was ever brought by a patient, by a plaintiff against Monsanto for Roundup. And it was a groundskeeper in California who was facing a form of lymphoma involving his skin, but the lymphoma was transforming and becoming aggressive. So he was given preferential trial, which means that the court moved his trial far, early, so he could have his day in court against Monsanto. The reason also this was extremely significant because it happened in 2018, around the same time, Jessica, that Bayer AG, that most of your listeners and viewers know that Bayer is the aspirin company, the German company, was finalizing the acquisition of Monsanto for $63 billion. All of these things were happening. So pretty much every news outlet was monitoring this case. It was very significant. It was in the summer of 2018, Johnson against Monsanto. That is how significant it was. It was in state court in San Francisco.
And what was the verdict in that case?
The verdict was in favor of Johnson. So Johnson won the verdict, and the original verdict was for $289 million. Wow. Now, eventually this went down and there was appeals. And as you know, I mean, whatever the verdict is, other side usually appeals and goes on and on. But eventually Mr. Johnson received excess of $20 million, I believe close to $25 million, if my memory serves me right.
So the court did find that in this case that Roundup was toxic.
Yes,
and caused
it was unanimous.
This guy's cancer.
It was unanimous. It was unanimous, and it was amazing. It was gratifying to see justice for this man. It was also gratifying that the jurors were able to see the evidence that linked Monsanto to not being upfront. In knowing the potential carcinogenicity of their weed killer.
And then you have the second court case, and that's Hardiman versus Monsanto. That one was a federal court case. The first one was a state, right? And this
Correct.
Is a federal court case. So what happened with this court case? Was this another cancer court case, another cancer patient?
Yes, all of them were patients who were diagnosed with non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And Hardiman was also in federal court. The trial was presided by Judge Chabria, who is the federal judge who was overseeing the entire litigation on the federal level. The significance of this was what we call, and I also detailed that in the book, a bellwether trial. So the bellwether trials, these are the initial federal court trials where they determine. They kind of set the stage into how the judges are going to view future litigations. In other words, if Monsanto wins, it might affect future trials. If the plaintiff wins, it could affect future trials and all of that. And in that trial, also Hardiman prevailed. And the verdict was $85 million. The significance of that, by the way, just so you know, Monsanto took this trial all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States of America, and the Supreme Court refused to hear the case. They said there's no reason to case. So they went into appeal after appeal after appeal, and then they submitted to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, no dice, we're not going to hear it.
Yeah, because the because the court case.
There was no reason to hear. There was no reason to hear.
And then the third case, which was a state lawsuit again, and that was a couple, the Pilliods versus Monsanto, and that resulted in a $2 billion judgment. Can you tell us about that and why that was?
My God, I mean, $2 billion, $1 billion each. This was a husband and a wife, elderly couple. They both sprayed for 30 years. They both were diagnosed with non-Hodgkin lymphoma. You've got a husband and a wife, married for 30 years, spraying one compound. They get affected by the same disease. It's common sense to ask maybe what's the common denominator, and it was Roundup. And the verdict was $1 billion for the husband and $1 billion for the wife. It was huge. This was tried in Oakland, also in state court.
What were they spraying? Like, did they?
Roundup.
I know, but like, there was it an agricultural situation?
No,
was it their
all
home?
Of the, yeah, this was their home for their home. Hardiman was the same. The Johnson trial, he was a groundskeeper, so he was spraying for his work. He was spraying every single day, 5 days a week. And by the way, for Johnson, I think it's worth mentioning, when Johnson started seeing the rash on his body, when he started seeing these abnormalities, he actually called Monsanto. He called Monsanto, he called the manufacturer, and this was came in court. And there were email exchange in Monsanto that was found in discovery, where basically Dr. Daniel Goldstein, who was one of the physicians who eventually that request came to him, said, you know, this is not something to, basically dismiss the situation. And Johnson never got a call back from the company that manufactures the weed killer, where he thought there may be something. I mean, you know, it's customer service 101. At least give the guy a call and listen to him.
Right. With all of these cases, this is long-term exposure for each one of them. And how long is that long-term exposure? You know, being able to, people might be using this and they don't know that in 20 years, they may end up being sick from the use of this product.
Very good question. I think the more you use a hazardous compound, the higher the risk is, right? I mean, it's just the way it is, because the opportunity to damage your cells, your DNA, your body becomes more. So it's just the way it is. We don't know what is the minimum safe amount of exposure. There has been some data that spraying more than 2 days a year could double the risk of developing non-Hodgkin lymphoma.
Oh my God.
Spraying more than 10 days in your lifetime could double the risk of non-Hodgkin lymphoma. I don't know what is the minimum safe that we can actually say this is safe to use. I believe that consumers should be aware of the potential risk. And if they decide to use it, they should use protective gear. They should wear gloves, they should wear long pants, they should not wear open sandals and things like that as an example. But nobody really does that because, Roundup was sold as very safe, right? I mean, it's like, you're safe, you can drink it. It's like water, you could fine, you could drink
it. They always say that, right?
Yeah, you can drink it.
What's been your observation with these court cases about the playbook of Monsanto's defense, including, you know, the discrediting of scientists?
I think they should drink it in Monsanto. In my opinion, the executives of Monsanto should drink Roundup and just show us. I think they should come to court and just drink it and just solve the problem. But of course, they won't do that. Look, the playbook of Monsanto is let's discredit the witnesses. Let's make sure that they are really bad people. They are just bought by money. That's really why they're doing it. Let's just make sure that they are doing this. They had a huge PR campaign when the IARC data came out that glyphosate is a potential carcinogen. They had some articles that were ghostwritten. And although Monsanto continues to contend that they acknowledge their involvement in the writing of these articles, it's not true. There was enough email communication back and forth that were in discovery that showed that they never really acknowledged a lot of these things. So that is part of the playbook. But the biggest thing for their playbook is twofold. One is hiding behind the EPA. The EPA said it's safe, then it's safe. Who are you to challenge the EPA? And number two, a study that was published It's called the Agricultural Health Study, the AHS. And that study showed no link between glyphosate and non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Before that study, by the way, came out, Monsanto criticized that study. They said, it's a terrible study. We're not going to believe what's going to come out of the study. This is not a good study. The study came out and it didn't show a link. It had so many downfalls, though. There's a lot of shortcomings of the study. There was a lot of issues with the study that led to this conclusion. But because the conclusions matched what Monsanto wanted, suddenly it became a very important study. But these are the EPA, EPA, EPA. EPA said that something is great, then we should not challenge it.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, in these court cases too, do they make all of the evidence available to the jurors?
Can we do just one show on this, please? Because yes. I am just really flabbergasted about this. I mean, I've never testified before this litigation as an expert witness. This was not something I've done before. But I was naive. I assumed you just show everything to the jurors. I mean, whatever was in discovery, you show it to them and let them make the decision. I mean, imagine you're in the jury box. Don't you want to see everything so you can make a decision and give a verdict? Well, no, guess what? Both sides, the plaintiff side wants to show a lot of things and the defense side want to hide a lot of things. And then the judge has to make a determination. What type of evidence you show the jury or not. So I can tell you, there's a lot of information that the jury never sees, because it just says, nope, we're not going to admit this into evidence. Nope, we're not going to show this to the jury. I was literally shocked that this is the case. It was very disappointing observation for me. It's legal, by the way. I mean, I'm not saying this is not legal. This is how our court system works. So, I mean, both sides are just basically, you know, legally, this is the law. So they're using the law to their advantage. But the judge will not allow everything to be shown. And I am certain by hiding certain things from the jury, they're not going to see the full picture. So, of course, they may actually, and that happened later on in some cases that Monsanto won.
And as a doctor, if you were to do that in your practice, that would be malpractice.
I mean, the thing is, here's, of course it would be malpractice, but here's the thing. The thing is, it's one thing, Jessica, if you don't have the information, right? So let's say somebody comes to the emergency room, you don't have all the information. Well, you have to act. You're not going to just say, well, I can't do anything. It's an emergency. You go ahead and do it. But it would be foolish if you have the information and you decide not to look at it. Yeah. That's what's going on. What's going on is we have a lot of data and we just somehow, the jury did not see all of the information in every single trial that was brought against Monsanto. And that was very disappointing to me, albeit legal, albeit this is what the courts allow. I'm not happy about it.
Did they try to discredit you as well?
Of course, everybody. I mean, look, but this is a playbook on both sides, right? I mean, I think the patient lawyers are going to discredit the witnesses of of Monsanto, and Monsanto is going to discredit the witnesses of the patients. So it's just that this is part of the playbook of both sides, because your goal is to show that this witness is not credible, so the jury won't believe what he or she has to say. That's kind of the lawyer playbook, if you will.
In California, glyphosate is considered toxic under California Proposition 65.
That was never allowed to be shown.
That was my question.
The three trials I testified in, by the way. So here's the irony for your listeners and for you. So let's take Mr. Johnson. Mr. Johnson is a resident of the state of California. The trial is in the state of California. And the jury was not allowed to know about Prop 65, what's going on in California, but they were allowed to talk about the European Union, what's happening in Europe. Yeah, of course. I mean, let's not talk about that. I live in a state where it says it's toxic, but tell me about Germany. Makes a lot of sense for me.
Yeah, it makes sense. These personal stories in your book, they're intense, they're tragic, but they're also inspiring. What does it take for an everyday person to go up against a corporate giant and win?
Patience inspired me all of my life before I even was ever in any of these trials. Patients endure treatment, prognosis, therapies, a lot of things. But to add to this, they have to go through litigation where they have not only to find the lawyers, but they have to be interrogated by Monsanto, a huge company, heavily lawyered up with a lot of lawyers, where they also get discredited, where they also be told sometimes, well, are you sure you really sprayed Roundup? Show us the bottles. Show us the receipts. Well, you're not going to really have receipts from the 1990s if you just bought Roundup bottles. Sometimes you just throw the receipt the minute you buy something, especially if you don't think there's anything with it. So you've got a lot of things that you have to go through. And Monsanto is not that kind to these patients. They say we sympathize with these patients and we understand what's going on with them. But sometimes they, when they are on the stand, some of the questions are very disheartening because they try to show that the patient may be lying about even spraying Roundup. So it's a problem. So it takes a lot of perseverance, resilience, and tenacity to go through all of what these patients have gone through.
Yeah, going through cancer in and of itself and then having to go up against these corporate giants. But then we see in your book, in what you're saying today, that there is hope, that they have won against this and against this extraordinarily huge entity, scary entity that, you know, has scared farmers into using their seeds and nothing else, suing them if their seeds somehow get into someone else's farm. You know, this is in my personal opinion, a pretty scary corporate entity that you don't want to mess with, but they did and they won.
Yes, it's a proof that sometimes the legal system works, sometimes it doesn't. But in these three litigation trials, it did. And they did win. And these three trials led to a lot of settlements for over 100,000 patients.
Yeah.
With what is estimated to be about $11 billion. So I think it was big and huge. And in my opinion, these three trials led to changes in the strategy of how Monsanto approached subsequent litigations and subsequent trials. So yes, you could win. And I think that it was very fortunate that the jury did see justice and delivered a measure of justice to these three in these three trials. I was very pleased to be part of these.
We're going to take a quick break, and I want to bring it back to talking about that $11 billion worth of settlements over 100,000 patients. A little bit of change of maybe not heart, but thought process for the EPA and where they are at this moment. Maybe they've been watching the trials. And then, you know, expanding that conversation about what we can do. You know, what power do we have? Do we have power against an entity?
We do have power, but we need to be together. I am not kidding. These trials opened my eyes to a lot of things. And if we don't really challenge status quo, governmental agencies demand answers, they're just going to walk all over us.
Yeah, and it's not going to change. So we're going to hold that thought, and we'll be right back.
Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying Eco Justice Radio. Stay connected by subscribing on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests, listen to extended episodes, and get connected with us on social media. Today, you are listening to Toxic Exposure, the Monsanto Roundup Trials, and the Search for Justice. I am your host, Jessica Aldridge, and our guest is Dr. Shadi Nabhan, hematologist and medical oncologist, and also author and podcaster.
So, change of heart at the EPA somewhat. On June 17, 2022, the San Francisco-based Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ordered the EPA to take a fresh and, quote, more critical look at the evidence of whether glyphosate poses unreasonable risks to human and the environment, to humans and the environment. And the court felt that the EPA needs to review the evidence carefully, implying that maybe this wasn't the case before. So maybe it's not so much a change at the EPA, but we're seeing this at the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Why is this so significant? And has there been any reports? That was June 17th, 2022.
Yeah, well, it was significant at the time. I'm losing my patience and hope at this point. It's been a year. So as you mentioned, Jessica, it was June 2022 where a court ordered the EPA to look at their interim decision that they issued before pertaining to glyphosate safety. And they said there were additional evidence and they could do more due diligence. They were supposed to release their report in October 2022, several months after the court order. Nothing has happened. There was extensions, and they said February, and we're now a year out. And it makes me wonder if we will ever see a report. I was happy. I was so elated back then in June of last year. I am not as elated anymore because I haven't seen anything and nobody really is pushing for anything. There is a very big possibility that the EPA may never issue anything and they just stand where they were, especially the fact that Monsanto has won several cases and they may feel pretty emboldened now that they won several cases after the first three. So it was significant at the time. It remains significant, but it's not going to be significant until I see something coming from the EPA.
So before we went to break, you talked about this huge $11 billion worth of settlements against Monsanto for over 100,000 patients. And this isn't just one settlement, correct? This is like a combination of different settlements. Can you expand on what happened and why were they sued?
I think all of these cases, all of these patients were patients who were diagnosed with non-Hodgkin lymphoma and who have sprayed Roundup. So basically they were all filing lawsuits against Monsanto alleging that their non-Hodgkin lymphoma was because of their spraying Roundup. And after the first three cases were lost, Judge Chabria appointed a lawyer by the name of Ken Feinberg. And Ken Feinberg was supposed to actually lead the mediation between both parties and reach to a settlement. And eventually, they reached out to a settlement of $11 billion for about over 100,000 of these cases. Now, this does not mean all cases, because some patients opted out of the settlement. They said, no, we want to go to court. And some patients, again, they may have not been already filed suits, so may file suits in the future. So this is what we know so far in terms of that settlement and what has happened.
And why do you think they may have opted out? Because they do want to take it to court, that they feel that their
some
case
them,
may win?
Yeah, I mean, some of them are, honestly, they may have principle. Like, you know what, hold on, I want to have my day in court. I just want to be in court. I don't know. It's hard for me to speak for the folks who opt out.
Of course.
But, as you know, you're not obligated to take the settlement and you're allowed legally to opt out, and your lawyers, they have just described to explain to you the pluses and minuses of being part of the settlement and opting out. Some of them may say, I may probably get more money if I go to court and I win versus the settlement. Because as you know, in the settlement, the money gets distributed amongst all of the cases and the lawyers take percentage and things like that.
For Monsanto, settling instead of going to court may or may not be in their favor, right? I mean, it's not in their favor if they continue to go to court and they continue to lose. But if they take these court cases, if they go to court and they continue to win, then it starts making them look better. But does a settlement actually make them look better in the public eye, in the public opinion?
They just wanted, whenever you settle, you want things to go away.
Yeah.
You're saying, I just want this to go away. And of course, Monsanto says, yeah, we're settling, but we're not admitting any guilt. Jessica, if you're paying $11 billion, call me crazy, but you're guilty. So you're not going to pay $11 billion if you're not guilty. But, it's really about wanting to get things away. And then Bayer or Monsanto became more strategic. They said, look, we'll just take cases to court that we think we have higher chances of winning. Now, how do you have higher chances of winning? Depends on the, jury pool, the jurisdiction, which area am I going to actually have the lawsuit, which state, which county, which city? Because you have all of these analyses that tells you, is it more favorable to the defense, more favorable to the plaintiff? And then there are some weak cases, because the plaintiff side, then suddenly they start taking all cases, right? Even weak cases, where cases maybe it's not really, the link is not that strong. But they say, well, we'll take the case. And Monsanto has, you know, a lot of experts and lawyers say, okay, this is a weak case. It's a good place for us to take the case to court. We'll take this one because if we win it, we'll just show that we are, in the eyes of the public opinion, we are winning cases. But the reality is people tend to forget that you have 100,000 other cases that got settled already. So despite the fact that they won few cases, in my opinion, that does not absolve them from the fact that they are guilty to the core.
Exactly. And they lost cases, period. They've lost cases and very yes. large cases. They have this $11 billion worth of settlements, you know, and then public opinion, people don't know that one case was fought better than another, or that they had better lawyers than the other, or that, as you said, there was weak cases. That people don't know that. So it's just talking points for Monsanto to say, well, exactly. we did X, Y, and Z. Bayer, the company, aspirin company, German aspirin company, who acquired Monsanto, made a statement recently that they will stop the sale of Roundup for residential use. Okay, they stopped the sale of Roundup for residential use. Is there a potential of other toxic, regrettable alternatives? What's your opinion of this action?
Well, I'd like them to stop selling the residential use. They said they will in 2023. Goodness, we are halfway through 2023. I can go to Home Depot or Walmart and I just buy it right now. So it's not really, they didn't really stop selling it. But I think that was the plan. They issued a statement they will do this. And they said, we want to do this not because we're guilty. We just want to minimize litigation exposure. That's really what they said. I welcome the idea of any opportunity to sell less Roundup to people is a good thing. As far as I'm concerned, any opportunity. It is still being sold. I hope that changes. But to your point, what's going to be replaced with? I mean, I'd like to know what type of testing is being done on the replacement. Is it carcinogenic? You replace one carcinogenic by another. Well, great. Thank you very much. That's not what we want. We want something safe. And to get something safe, you want to make sure there was enough study. There were enough studies that were done to assure the safety of whatever the public is going to consume or use.
Third-party studies, right?
Yes,
not
exactly
Monsanto
right.
Ram studies.
Yeah. Thank you. Exactly right.
When you and I spoke previously, to be critical thinkers for ourselves and don't always trust what the EPA is telling us.
No, we can't. Just because somebody, we do that all the time in our lives.
Yeah.
What's the goal? What do we usually say? Trust, but verify.
Exactly.
Right? Don't we say that all the time? I mean, if I tell you this is a great brand of car, just go buy it and just put as much money as you want in it. You are going to research it a little bit. You're going to say, okay, well, I mean, I trust Chaddy. I mean, I think maybe this car is great. Let me just research it and read about it and read reviews and try to understand. We do that in our daily lives every single day. So how can we not do this about something that common that could affect our health?
Mm-hmm. Recently, there was a verdict, just recently, in a trial that was Gordon versus Monsanto, which was taking place in St. Louis, once the home of Monsanto's corporate headquarters. Unfortunately, what was the verdict in this case? What was the case in regards to? And how does that outcome affect other cases?
I'm very disappointed with the verdict. I testified in that case. I basically was asked to testify about prognosis, diagnosis, and outcome of the patient. Charlene Gordon is a young patient who was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin lymphoma at the age of 39. The average age of this disease is 65 to 68. So she was diagnosed 30 years younger than the average age of this disease. She was diagnosed, she sprayed lymphoma all over, she sprayed Roundup all over, and
at home, she was spraying it
at home. This was at home, yeah. Her case was tried in St. Louis County, I believe, in front of the jury, and the jury voted and they ruled for Monsanto 9-3. And I was very disappointed. I respect the jury's decision. I don't agree with it. I think they did not see the full picture. I think there was a lot of evidence that was not allowed to be shown to the jury. I am extremely disappointed. I'm upset. I don't think this was the right verdict. I don't know what additional legal actions will be taken. I'm certainly hoping that there will be an appeal for this, but I can tell you that not all the evidence was allowed to be shown to the jury.
Are you allowed to speak to some of that evidence, or is that confidential?
No, I mean, if it's not allowed to be shown, it's not allowed to be shown. Basically, we can only speak to whatever was shown in public court, in public opinion. But remember that if there's something that the plaintiff wanted to show the jury and the judge said, no, this is not admissible, it's not part, you cannot use this as an evidence, then nobody can see it. It's just basically not considered part of the court records to be shown to the jury.
I mean, are but you also this, like in public it, now that you're no longer in the speak to these things?
Well, I wrote a book about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the book has enough evidence for everybody to read. There's everything is in there, in that book, about evidence. There were email communications. There were pictures. A lot of things were shown in public. I detail that. I take the reader through my thought process because I did not know about that link, Jessica, when I first was called in the spring of 2016. I did not know. But I studied this. I read this. I looked at documents, and I became convinced. And I detail all of this. So, you know, more than this, you know, again, all of it is actually in the book itself. But again, I mean, in St. Louis, this particular, remember, Monsanto's headquarters are in St. Louis. So kind of like, you know, it's a friendly territory.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can't speak for the jury. In my opinion, they made a mistake. I respect their opinion. I commend them for spending 4 weeks in court and listening to countless testimonies and everything, but I respectfully disagree with their decision.
So we're at time, but I want people to know where to follow you, your efforts, find your book. How can people find you?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, truly. Thank you so much. So I'm on social media, on Twitter, at Shadi Nabhan, on Instagram, Shadi_healthcareunfiltered. I have a podcast called Healthcare Unfiltered. It is everywhere they listen to podcasts, also on YouTube, and they can find everything on www.shadinabhan.com. My book is available everywhere you consume books. It's on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, or you can purchase it through my publisher's website, Johns Hopkins University Press. And I hope it's really, this is my contribution to help people know what actually happened. It is written, by the way, in a way that you do not need to be a doctor or a lawyer. This is written in a very easy language because I really want as many people to read it, to understand what happened, and to really feel for all of the patients that have been hurt by Monsanto.
And to take a stand too, right?
I hope they do.
And it is an easy book to read, and I'm partially through it right now, and I look forward to finishing it.
Don't forget to write a review when you're done, Jessica.
Yes, I will.
You have to write a review on Amazon and Goodreads. That's very important.
I will. If people want to get more information on glyphosate and Roundup and keep up on what's happening, because, you know, this court case just happened, for people to know what's going on, what are some of the resources? Last question for you. And then just to remind our audience, we're going to ask a few more questions. So if you want to hear those questions, please go to our website, Eco Justice Radio. But what are some of the resources that you would recommend to keep people up to date?
You mentioned glyphosategirl.com. She's excellent. She has a website called also Glyphosate Facts. I think they should go there and follow her. I also think they can follow US Right to Know, as well as the New Ledge, which is also a circulation. And Carrie Gillum is a journalist that also follows Monsanto and a very environmental activist as well. I think they should stay abreast with everything the EPA is doing, everything, what's happening out there, because their decisions really are making a huge difference in what we are going to do. And they need to be aware of what's actually happening. So these are just some of the resources that I would suggest they follow.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Shadi, for being with us today. It's been great to have you as a guest, extraordinarily informative. Audience, remember, going to continue this conversation, so head over to ecojusticeradio.org to hear the extended version. Thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you, Jessica.
Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore other shows, visit our website at ecojusticeradio.org and subscribe to our podcast. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, Toxic Exposure, the Monsanto Roundup Trials and the Search for Justice. Thank you to our guest, Dr. Shadi Namhan, and always thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please connect with us on social media at Eco Justice Radio, SoCal 350, and Adventures in Waste. If you like what you heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. You have been listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350 and Adventures in Waste. Executive producer Jack Eye, producer and co-host Jessica Aldridge, co-host Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kbu.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.